My guest, John Densmore, is a true visionary. Co-founder and drummer of the iconic rock group The Doors, he was their timekeeper, who kept the beat for the words of Jim Morrison and the music of the band. His book, The Seekers, is a guide for all of us who search the inner and outer worlds to develop a deeper understanding of what makes it all tick. Filled with interviews of some of the most influential artists in many fields, John probes the richness of all with his realization that each one of us is an artist in our own way. As always, a very special thanks to my patrons who make this podcast possible. If you enjoy listening, please subscribe and visit my website, barrykibrick.com, to become a patron or just to get in touch with me. I appreciate hearing from you, and I will answer all your emails. Now, enjoy my conversation with the legendary John Densmore. John, it is such a pleasure to see you again. I'm going to brag. We did have tea the other day at my house, and I can't think of anything more enjoyable than tea with one of the most iconic musicians, drummers, and bands. And John, you are a true sage. I'm glad you're here to discuss your book, The Seekers. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Barry, thank you for acknowledging I'm not dead yet. That's good. Yeah.
You're very much alive.
So listen, Barry, a couple of weeks ago, you had a guest on, a Nobel Prize winning physicist.
I was going to bring him up in the show, in fact.
Well, I'm bringing him up right now.
Go ahead.
It was no coincidence that that guest was just a week or two before me, because I listened and I was, he was describing the entire cosmos as one time with a capital T, one time. And I thought, wow. You know, for years they've been making jokes about dumb drummers. Actually, we are quantum physicists.
Well, I was even going to go further than that. Without that primal beat, I'm not sure we would have progressed as human beings. So you're not only a physicist, I think you are the mechanism that led us to civilization.
Oh, I'm feeling helium rise in my skull now. Thank you. Well, you know, what's really interesting is that drummers, one beat is really big, between one beat and the next. It's a big, big space to drummers. And if we play laid back, you know, a split second later than you should, then it gives room for the blues to come in. That's what you do when you're playing a blues. If you're playing military music, you push it. You play on the front of the beat, and if you feel like saluting or whatever. So we're playing around in this dark matter between beats. And so I'm glad to know I'm a quantum dude.
You're more than a quantum dude. You know, in fact, when we spoke about, as I said, I was going to bring him up later, because the one thing Frank actually says is that time is the true measurement of really one thing, and that's change. And I thought the most constant thing in the universe is change. And again, it relates back to that primal beat.
Yeah. And the Native Americans say that the big drum they play in their powwow dances is the heartbeat of Mother Earth. So we're getting down to it.
We are. And in your book, what you do, John, is you besides weaving in the wonderful work of the drummer, you also, your book was designed to seek out other, I guess we'll call them wise men, sages, as you speak, or women. And some of them you might not have even have liked as much. I'll let the viewers read, the listeners read that part, but I won't mention the person's name here. But what you do is you dedicate this to all the sonic warriors, the music lovers who ride the music of the spheres. That's it, right? The spheres are the planets, the galaxies.
Tell me about it. I mean, you're allowed to get cosmic in your old age, you know?
If not now, then when? As the great Hillel said. I mean, it's true.
Yeah,
this is when we have to do it. And, you know, one of the things, in fact, to prove you're still alive, one of the things you say is you're always looking for a new vibration or reinvigorating an old one.
Break that down again for me.
It's your words. That. You said it, brother.
You know,
you said you're always looking for a new vibration or reinvigorating an old one.
You know, this morning I was thinking how you had said to me, maybe when we had tea, that there were some authors that you interviewed and you read them a sentence or two that they wrote and they said, I wrote that. And I was reading my book this morning to kind of get prepped. And a lot of it, I was just surprised that I thought of this stuff. And then my next thought was, oh, well, somehow artists somehow get into a channel where the muse comes in and they come, it comes through you. You don't own it. You can get in trouble with your ego with that one. And so, and I'm trying to get across that the reader doesn't have to play music that climbs the charts. You're still going in the same zone, the same sort of meditative zone that these icons are in. And there's a healing there, it especially during this pandemic. My God, the music or painting or whatever you're doing is salve. It's medicine for the soul.
And you really say that we all can access it. We don't, like you said, you don't have to be a musician. You don't have to be you don't even have to be an artist. You could work at the Walmart or the Rite Aid. As long as you want, you could access those magical moments that really do reside in all of us. Sometimes we may need to hear the music or see the art to get it released, but it resides in all of us.
Yeah, I think I grab a William Blake quote that a little bit of eternity is waiting for us every day.
Oh, I love that. I love you. You grab that and you put it in the book. Let me tell my listeners, some of the people that are in the book that you write about. It goes from Ravi Shankar to Patti Smith, Jim Morrison to Janis Joplin, Bob Marley, and of course, even Gustav Dudamel from the Philharmonic, to your bandmate, Ray Manzarek. And I brag about this a little bit, but I am blessed to have had Ray on my show twice, you on my show twice, and I actually had Robbie Krieger on my other show. I don't know if you knew, I did a show with Fritz Coleman, the NBC weatherman out here, called It's Fritz. And Robbie came in and sat in on a number of our sessions.
Well, if you want to have Jim on next, I'll try and arrange that.
Oh, you know what? I already have Jim on, and I'll tell you why. You say something in here that I so believe in. When you talked about Ray, and we'll get into further, but it sprung to my mind when you said Jim. Ray is now more alive to you than when he was physically alive. And you mentioned this about your mom as well. And when my mom passed, I might have spoken with her once a week, you know, just to check in, but it's been over 25 years and she's with me more every day. And I talk and think about her more every day. So, you know, I know you talk to Jim. And I know you talked to Ray, you wrote about it. So I would love you to send him on down.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I quote George Harrison reminiscing about John Lennon passing. And he said something like, well, if you can't feel deeply about someone who is close once they've crossed over, then how are you going to feel deeply about Jesus or Allah or whoever you're into? And Yeah, I can, you know, I hear Jim's words and I'm just, oh my God, I can't believe how blessed I was to run into this guy and help create a sonic bed for him to lie down in.
Well, you said, in fact, it was Ray who knew him, I think, from film class while you guys were at school. And he's the one that brought you back those three lines that when you read them, and I hope you'll do it again for me, we did it just before we came on. When you read those three lines by Jim, you knew you guys were about to do something. So tell us those lines again that Jim wrote that Ray brought to your attention.
Yeah, let me, I was going to just read this if I can find it. Are you editing this thing or is this live?
Nah, I'm going to edit it, but I don't know. I like watching you look through stuff, so I may keep this thing in there, although no one else will be seeing it. You know what? You're the one that wrote, it's the silence anyway that's going to be the blessing of this whole thing. We're going to be talking about the silence, but go ahead. Say those beautiful words.
You know, I was in Ray's parents' garage where we were jamming, and there was this real shy, awkward guy in the corner who had never sung before, and I thought, this is not the next Mick Jagger. This is not going to work. And then Ray hands me a crumpled piece of paper that Jim wrote down on. Day destroys the night. Night divides the day. Tried to run, tried to hide, break on through to the other side. I'm like, where's my drumsticks? That's rhythmic. Oh my God. I can't, I want to, oh yeah. So his words are always taught me how to drum, you know.
Well, that's right. And what I was stunned though was that he wasn't at all, quote unquote, as you say, musical. He didn't know how a single note, a single instrument. He never sang. He didn't do anything until you guys laid that sonic bed down for him to lie on.
And maybe that's the key to this quartet going beyond the four of us, because here's Jim, who's real insecure, but has these words and has melodies. He's thought of melodies to remember the words, and he'll just sing it to us a cappella, and then we work it out like F sharp and wait, it's a waltz. Okay, go ahead or whatever. And he also, because of that novice musicianship and insecurity, he said, oh, let's not say lyrics by me. Let's just say all music by the Doors. Let's split all the money. You know, so it became this unbelievable democracy for a few precious years, which initiated the four of us each to give 200%.
Well, you said, I'm going to paraphrase because I don't remember it exactly, but when you talk about an ensemble getting together, whether it's four people or a complete orchestra, it's when the people in that ensemble are giving their all to the others that the magic really is made.
Exactly. And I got that from you. You had Neil deGrasse Tyson on, and he gave this beautiful explanation about the gravitational pull of all the planets in the solar system. We're not just going around. We're being affected by all the other planets' gravitational pull. So we're kind of, the circle we're going around is kind of jagged and bumpy and up and down, exactly like a musical ensemble. You have to listen to each other. You've got to. And so there you have it.
Well, you say that a musician's primary compass through life is their ears. And you use these words, I hear the world. I know my son, who's a filmmaker, he sometimes sees things as film, as a vision, but you hear the world.
And painters and filmmakers see the world. It's their primary focus that gets them, you know. So
you say that everyone is struggling to make sense out of their lives. And this book is, besides being a guide to creativity, it is truly, if you read it in the manner that you wrote it, it is to help us all make sense out of our lives. And that began even with your mom. And we mentioned about her before as, you know, passing, you speak to her more than ever. But you really talk about how survival was her thing. And that, you know, your mom, even though she wasn't a musician or anything, she was, as you, a force of nature.
And she was a painter. And her paintings, she used to do figurative. She had technique. She went to Chouinard Art School, but she got into abstract, which I didn't quite understand, although I love jazz and I love abstract painting. But she said, when I feel pain, I paint. And she made it to 94. And I thought, whoa, now there's a gift, you know? I hope I have that survival instinct. But that's the deal about getting into that creative zone. It's healing as hell. And so I was pretty surprised and shocked that I had my mom in the same book as Lou Reed, but she should be there in the first chapter because I came out of her womb. And I go on about how all of us, the first drum beat we ever heard was in the womb, our mom's heartbeat. And that's where we're all trying to get back to when we hear a music that makes us dance. It has to be a solid beat, slow if it's a ballad, fast if it's a salsa. But it's, I don't know, it's that homeland security. So mom's first.
And that beat, what is so, in my opinion, unbelievable, is it's the same beat heard by all 7 billion of us on this plane and all of those who've already passed on to the other side. It is virtually the same beat.
I love that. You know, Thelonious Monk had advice, 10 tips to make you a good musician. And the very first tip was you have to have a good sense of time, especially if you're not the drummer. Oh my God. So that means intuiting what you're talking about, that big bang, that heartbeat from the beginning of time. I'm getting really cosmic now, but you know, I mean, that's the key.
It definitely is the key. And you know, you the first thing you just mentioned about is the jazz. And one of the first people that is a musician, well, no, there was two others. There's Mr. Armour and Fred Katz who really influenced you. But yeah, it was Elvin Jones who's used rhythm, as you say, to access eternity.
Yeah. Oh, God. I'm going to read you a little section here about Elvin and Coltrane. It says, one of Coltrane's LPs was called Om, which in Sanskrit means to sound. It also is defined as all that exists beyond the three forms of time, past, present, and future, included in one sound. Elvin implied that from moment to moment. If John Coltrane was obviously searching for the truth, Elvin Jones had already found it through rhythm. Yeah. So, you know, I'm a teenager and I sneak into Shelley's Manhole with my fake ID from Tijuana. And the doorman looks at it. He knows it's fake and lets me in anyway. And I know that the dressing room is next to the bathroom. So I go to the bathroom a lot, although I don't have to, but I'm in that bathroom and on the other side of the wall is John Coltrane and Elvin Jones. You know, I don't know they're going to be giant icons, but I know there's some magic. There's magic here. And one time I'm in there and someone knocks on the door and, oh God. And I open it and it's Coltrane looking at me. And I'm, dresser, bathroom's vacant here. And he just said, man, walks on. And then I see Elvin and Elvin smiles at me. I'm like, oh my God, you know. And then later, after my idols mentor Coltrane passed, I still would see Elvin and bravely brought him my first self-centered memoir. I have three now, Riders on the Storm. And I was real nervous about Elvin being condescending, you know, jazz being a higher art. And he barely had heard of the Doors. But I immediately said, hey, you know, in this book, I wrote that you gave me my hands. And then by the end of his life, I helped bring his drums to the car. So this is true mentorship.
And, you know, what I gather is it's your appreciation of everything that we're going to be talking about, everything that you write about, the people that you met. It's your appreciation that does something to me. I can't help it. Like even when you came by, there's something about your presence, John. I know you're writing about these icons, but you're really one of them. And I know you have to be humble and you can't say that, so I'm able to, but it is, there's something that comes out. You know, I'm going to use your words. It's a connection to the void, a raising of consciousness that I might as well use your own words that you spoke about Jim Morrison. So let's go to him. We can talk about Jim in that way, even if you feel uncomfortable talking about you.
What was the question again?
Yeah, there was no question. I just told you how
okay.
One of the things about Jim is he's the kind of encounter you say with someone who seemed to have access to the other world.
Yeah. All right. Here's the closing paragraph of the book. What do my mentors have in common? Looking past the trappings of each artist's sound and each artist's culture, we can see the deep humanity inherent to all types of music. All of us are made of flesh and bone, heart and soul, and we share the same experience of driving, walking, or running down the road from birth to death, whether we're traveling on the German Autobahn or an Appalachian dirt road. Our experience is the same. We have embarked on a journey of spirit in our human bodies as we proceed down our path on planet Earth. And music's a candle, lighting the way along the road toward the art of living. So, you know, I get real inspired too by all these artists. If you're inspired by me, so we're all in the same gumbo.
Oh, I love it. And you know, you bring in Tom Petty, who's, by the way, Tom lived in our neighborhood. I mean, you probably know that as well as I do, because since we're somewhat from the same neighborhood, he said something interesting about Jim when you spoke to him. And it was a theory he had that I want to share with my listeners, because so many of the artists, whether it was Jimi Hendrix, Jim Morrison, Janis Joplin, that Tom said some artists, the very, very great ones, come along with the flame. You said that they light that candle and it's turned all the way up and the flame is all the way up. And that's why they use a lot of fuel fast, because if you don't think of it that way, it's almost too heartbreaking. It seems Tom puts it in a way that, I don't know, sort of soothes the soul a little bit.
Yeah. Well, my heart is still breaking over losing Tom. I was going to do another interview with him and he passed. But he's right that, you know, Jim and Janis are cautionary tales. And some artists have self-destruction and creativity in the same package. Some don't. Picasso lived to 90. So I can just take solace in Jim and Janice's words and singing that it's kind of like what they do to us is open heart surgery without the knife.
Uh-huh.
That's a line from Hakim Adabudi, a poet I know, and I wanted to use it again. I love that line.
Oh, well, I'm glad.
Yeah, that's what art does, I hope, you know.
Oh, and it does that and what's what we're going to be talking about, all that it does. And what I think, this is what actually got me to even call my program Between the Lines. And it's not these words that you wrote, but the words you wrote mimic that. And it's that space between one beat and the next that is the most important. It's the space that implies the feel of the entire composition. And you mentioned two guests that I've had on my show, Neil deGrasse Tyson and the Nobel laureate Frank Wilczek, and both of them agreed that it's not a void by any means. The space is either a frequency, it's a field, it's a vibration. There's no void in the universe, but there is space. And that space allows things to be heard, to be seen, to be felt on a level that without it, you couldn't appreciate the notes themselves.
Yeah, you don't appreciate it as much. And you have stumbled or intuited a title, Between the Lines, which is exactly what this book is about. Between the notes, or when Dudamel keeps his hands up in the air after a big concert, so we know we're not really allowed to applaud until his meditation of silence ends, which is a balance to the big, loud Beethoven you just heard. I don't know. There's something in there that, and I write about Ram Dass, a mystic who had a stroke, and he was embarrassed because he spoke his lectures. He had big pauses in between the lines, Barry. And then he realized, well, wait a minute. My listeners are contemplating meditation a little more between my sentences, and they're getting something I was trying to tell them about, and they're living it.
Well,
it's between the lines, you know?
I'm going to share then a follow-up with you of a great Baba Ram Dass story.
Okay.
I read your book, and when I did, I said, I can't wait for John to get it so I can share my Baba Ram Dass story, and we'll see how it plays off of yours. Ram Dass, as we know, wrote the original book, Be Here Now. And after his stroke, he wrote Still Here. And you know that. It was in the book. And he was very much concerned, as you said, with people because of the way his speech was after his stroke.
Correct.
He happened to have been a fan of my show and thought that in order to test it out, he would come on my program.
Excellent.
So he comes on the show, and right off the bat, you talk about auras. You sense there's an aura around Baba Ram Dass that's just, you're in his presence and you can feel it. But I knew that he warned me he was very concerned about this. So the first thing I did, and I knew he would get it, but everyone in the booth in the green room almost died when I said to him, I welcomed him to the show and he began to speak and it was very slow. And I simply said, hey, Baba, we've only got 30 minutes here. Speed it up, will you? He got it right away and he was put at ease. And then I said to him these words. I said, my biggest problem in life is being in the now. And then I said, so can you help me be in the now? And he said, he paused. I took a breath and he simply said, now? And I took another breath and he said, now? And I took another breath and he said, now. And sure enough, after those three breaths, I was in the now. And our conversation flowed so beautifully. And his pauses, you were right. All it did was allow me to probe deeper into my own mind at that time.
Mm. What a gift. God, we got to hang out with one of the magical ones. Yeah.
Well,
And we got a little dust, fairy dust on us. So
I'll take that. I mean, that's if there's beauty in what we do, it is that we do get that little privilege of hanging around with some other people that, others may not. But hopefully by listening to this and reading your book, it'll rub off on them.
I mean, ultimately, everyone around is a teacher, even my dog. So, we can always learn.
Oh, always. And one of the people you learned from and who taught the entire Western civilization, who's in the book, is Ravi Shankar. And we know that. In fact, what was interesting, and we know there's no such thing as a coincidence, or maybe there is, but not really. But you and George Harrison and was it Jim that was with you? I think it was Jim that was with you. And I don't
Robbie
think
Krieger.
Robbie was, right. Robbie was.
He studied sitar. I studied tabla.
And his main goal was to bring more patience to the West. As a timekeeper, patience is something that you have to be very aware of.
Our song, The End, the guitar was tuned to raga tuning, in East Indian tuning. And, at the time, 3-minute pop songs were like that. And The End was 10, 15 minutes. And ragas were 10 or 15 minutes each. And I think Ravi kind of said that the West is too quick to in their foreplay. You'll get to the climax, but take your time, and then the climax will be even better. So we kind of learned about that, and it affected The End, that song. So it's great to have that wash over. We weren't trying to play. I mean, tablas is the most difficult drumming in the world. I was fooling around with it, but it influenced us, and it came out through our genre. And so it's good to be open to all kinds of influences.
And it makes us all, that breath again. Isn't it that just even hearing you talk about it, there's a soothing thing that comes about it. And maybe, I know you talk about another outside influence of what we'll call Western sound was you bring in Bob Marley, and how that vibration and how reggae was also something that you adapted. You were always open to bringing these sounds into your realm.
Well, as a drummer, I heard an interview with Stuart Copeland the other day, the drummer for The Police, and he adapted reggae wonderfully into his rock style. But he was saying when he first heard it, and I agree, you hear drumming and you go, what? They flipped it. They made it backwards. What are they doing? They're nuts. And then it kind of gets under your skin and it's infectious. And so technically, they've kind of flipped over what we rock and rollers do in 4/4 time. And then Marley writes, playing a rhythm, fighting against the system. Oh, so he knew what they were doing. They even rhythmically twisted it around to rearrange some brain cells for the listener.
You say this, again, you talk about these great people, but as I say, it's your words that I think are so valuable here. You write that art is like a sleight of hand, a kind of magic, a seance that when done well can imbue people with soul.
I wrote that?
Yes, you did. I better stop doing this.
What can I say?
Look at that. It's the spirit. Is that John?
That's my phone.
Oh, I thought God. It might be Jim calling.
Hey, Jim. Oh, it's for you, Barry.
Jim, nice to hear from you again. We were just talking about you. I love it. I love it.
You know, all these artists, the reason I wrote this thing is because they put me in a trance state, you know, somehow what art taps into something so deep. Oh, well, I just love what your physicist said about the reason he put some Rumi poems and a few poems in his physicist book is the parallel between they work with complex formulas that are trying to reduce down to a simple formula, and poetry is similar. It's trying to get to the skeleton of language, right? And so if you get to the essence, then you're into something really primal and deep that connects us all.
Oh, you know, I'm gonna lighten the load. I'm gonna change a little shape here. I'm gonna shift shape for a second. Because the person that introduces you to reggae is also someone that lives in our neighborhood who I adore, and was part of that power trio we put together when I did that Fritz show. Phil Chen, the bass man.
Oh yeah, man. Yeah, the thing is, I don't mind playing bass, Rasta. Yeah.
And for Phil, a Chinese American, he does it with a good voice accent. Like that.
Born in Jamaica.
Yep.
Yeah. And Robbie and I, Doors guitar player, were in England, and we were playing with Phil, and he asked, is it possible that we could go to Jamaica and record the rest of this album? Then I could see my mom. And we did. And this was before reggae came to the States. And so we were exposed to this stuff. Our mind was blown. And we got home, and I had Linda Ronstadt's bass player come over and listen to this stuff. And I said, check out the bass. It's like melodic. And the drums are all different. And he said, what is this called? Reggie? And I said, no, reggae. Now, a year later, we're in Hollywood, Linda Ronstadt has a number one hit covering Many Rivers to Cross by Jimmy Cliff. You're welcome. I turn them on to all the reggae, you know, as one does when one gets inspired by some new art form. And so... yeah, Phil Chen, thank you for that.
I love Phil. In fact, I want to get back in touch with him. It's been a long time. And he's one of those men that are just so kind, so yeah. Filled with grace, and yeah. And always feeling so appreciative of life. It's again, yeah. Contagious, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, that's Phil Chen.
You also use writers, like you said, and others in this book. One of them that you truly got into was Joseph Campbell. And in fact, you had an opportunity to throw some questions at him in a conference or something, some sort of environment that you guys were in together. And the words that he wrote but I think reflect him is joyful participation in the sorrows of the world. That's those words, whose ever they are, I don't care. But if we could have joyful participation in the sorrows of the world, talk about needing it now, man, that's something we need right now.
Yeah. And Campbell also said, God is a metaphor beyond all human thought. But we keep trying to figure it out, you know.
That's what the Frank Wilczek said as well. That's our job. Our job is to figure it out. That's that. If we have all of us have that purpose in life, is to somehow, at least in our minds, do the best we can to figure it out, at least for ourselves. Isn't that's what it's about?
Yeah. And Campbell, Oh boy. I mean, you know, he had never been to a movie, and then he saw Star Wars, which was George Lucas, I think, read Campbell and then got inspired to do this stuff. And then a friend of mine took Campbell to the Grateful Dead concert. He had never been to a concert or anything. And he went, my God, it's a Dionysian festival, you know. Which it was.
But, you know, you say something that as you've grown older and we get back to this, the silence is much louder than you thought. And I thought that's an interesting thing, because is it that we're older? Is it that we are experiencing life differently as the time moves forward? It does, though, seem that silence. I know for myself, when I was a younger person, I couldn't stand sort of not doing anything and being silent. And now I sometimes don't want to do anything but that.
Wow. That's good, because, you know, rock and roll is rather, I mean, I'm generalizing, but it's rather loud. It's sort of like the America, a country in its adolescence, right? And so, yeah, it's calming to get a little quiet, that's for sure. And I had tinnitus, the ringing in the ears from, I blamed it on the guitar player, but it was really from crashing my cymbals. See, back there, you can see them. No,
I do.
But so I get this ringing in my ears, and I really straighten out my substance abuse, which I was very moderate with, because Jim was the example of going too far. But I cut out all coffee and alcohol and for a year or two, and the ringing went way down. But I was asking myself, what the fuck is this? I'm a musician and I have ringing? What is this message? Oh, now I can look back and see, oh, I'm supposed to work hard at another avenue of creativity, writing. I am now looking for music in between the sentences, or between the Barry Kibrick lines. And that's where that led, you know? So it's quieter, and I'm older, and well, Carl Jung, great German shrink, said the first half of your life is very active. He's just generalizing, and the second half is trying to reflect on what the hell the first half meant.
Oh, that's beautiful.
There you go. That's why it gets a little quieter. It's more inner.
And, you know, you also talk about inner. You say that we all struggle with all of our daily problems. And again, this, no one is escapes from this, whether you're famous, infamous, or nothing.
Right.
We all have it. Right. But you say there's something indefinable inside us that redeems us from that chaos. And I can't help but when you say that you had this tinnitus in your ears, you found redemption by using it as a way to move on to another path.
Yeah, as a message. All right, you live your life and you've had your ladder against a wall, and in your midlife you go, oh, wait a minute, it's been leaning against the wrong wall. I got to put it over here. And then there's some. Let's see, the translator of Rumi, Coleman Barks, great translator, whom my friend Robert Bly had a sort of academic translation of Rumi and threw it down on the table in front of Coleman and said, these poems are in prison, release them. And Coleman said, the microcosm is bigger than the macrocosm. Oh my God. So he's saying the inner life is bigger than all the giant cosmos out there. Well, that's interesting. Talk about inside. Wow, there's a giant concert in there. I think I'll get quiet and try and listen.
Oh, when you mentioned I had Frank Wilczek on, and he said the same thing. In fact, the space between, again, the space between the electron circling the nucleus is as if a fly was sitting on a blade of grass on one end of a football field, and three football fields away would be that electron. So even the space within us is, according to him and Neil deGrasse Tyson, is bigger than the space between the planets, between the galaxies. It's amazing what's inside us. And again, there, some of it's on a frequency level, some of it's on a particle level, some of it, I can't believe we're speaking about physics so much here, but what the heck? But it's so true. Inside is that bigger than the macro.
I was watching Nova the other night, and they said that the first star, the very first star that exploded or whatever, was 17 million times hotter than our sun. Wrap your mind around that. I mean, that's the thing about, I remember hearing Carl Sagan just give statistics of the size of the cosmos. He wasn't getting cosmic or emotional, just statistics, and trying to wrap my mind around that. I could not do it. And that gives me awe. That is God or the mystery or whatever. So there's a big space out there, and we can ponder it with our eyes closed.
Well, isn't that, do you, I think there's a little part in the book where you say that that is it for you. It's the big M, the mystery.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And well, that, I like that rather than the big G, as in God, because, you know, we're going to, our God's better than yours, so let's fight, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think mystery is fine. And however you want to see it and feel it, whatever it is, you know what you say, and I think this might be the healing soul of all, is just get into something you love. When you're doing it, your words, infinity creeps in.
Yeah, and you know, before the pandemic, I occasionally would do poetry readings. I've read poetry and played hand drums while I do that at Beyond Baroque, wonderful place in Venice, and there'd be a few hundred people. But if it was the right, if somehow that moment with the audience was just the stars were aligned or something, it was as powerful as 20,000 people at Madison Square Garden. It fed me as much. And then I realized, oh, it's the process, not the goal. We're never going to get, I mean, you know, to get giant gold records is great, but it's not the be all end all. I mean, why would people who get the lottery flip out and have it ruin their lives? So the process, the road, the search. Bob Dylan was asked, is he happy? And he wouldn't even answer the question. Happy? What? Next.
Well, you're,
it's
you're,
the road.
It's, I have to use your words. The path is where the excitement is. And in that spirit, anyone can find the road. So it's not, it's the path. It's just that, that quest. I don't even like to use the term journey, because journey implies a destination. But quest is you're open to anything that you find on that journey.
Yeah, I like that. Journey is, All right, I'm going to file that. Thank you.
10%. John, you know, oh my gosh, our time is up. I'll play just one more little thing that I want.
I'm fine. Do what you whatever.
Okay, then we'll yap a little bit more if you're fine.
Yeah, please.
A touch of sonic seasoning turns a meal from bland to delicious.
Well, seasoning is subtle stuff. It's not the actual meat or whatever it is. So music is so ephemeral. You know, you look at a painting, you see it, or a movie or whatever. What is this music? It's like in the air from heart to heart, or so, unless it's a record, but a live performance. It's such a direct connection to the other world somehow. I don't know. What is this stuff that when a musician plays, I start laughing or crying or something just from sound? I don't know where I'm going here, but it's magic.
Well, you know, let me go with you for a second, because if you put a stethoscope to your head, you wouldn't see or hear any sound and you wouldn't see any vision. So it's consciousness itself that interprets those vibrations. And and in fact, I used this example once where if, the classic line, a tree falls in the forest, does it make a sound? And the answer is no, it doesn't make a sound. It'll make a sound wave. It'll make a percussionary compression of the air. But sound can only be something that's relayed through consciousness. Otherwise, if there's nothing to be conscious of, that it's just a wave.
Barry, you're going quantum again on us.
Well, you know, that's what you know, did me. What can I tell you?
So to continue that, I'm tapping my wrist. This is 80% water? What? This wood table is not solid? Okay. What's so beautiful is that these linear scientists have been forced to mythologize everything. It's gotten mystical. They can't help it, you know. So, and that's where, you know, like when I hear something is synchronistic, I eat it up. Whereas your physicist friend was a little reluctant. He likes to nail down facts because that's what they do. But boy.
Yeah, you know, you're right. I kept trying to get him to go that other little mile, you know, and he just couldn't do it. Am I right? Do you remember the conversation? I kept saying, come on, Frank, please come there with me. You
know? He couldn't articulate it, but he dropped Rumi and various poets in his stuff, which it is the skeleton of language and crosses into that zone of sound or whatever, the deep primal urge. And so he gets it. He just, couldn't articulate it.
He didn't. And that was what's beautiful. And what's beautiful, John, is having you. I'm going to end with your words. All of us are made of flesh and bone, heart and soul, and we share the same experiences. And as you said, music is a candle lighting the way along the road toward the art of living. And John, you are the timekeeper of the music. And I can't thank you enough for lighting the way along my road. Thank you, my dear friend.
Hey, Barry, you know, each book I finish, I go, this is my last, damn it. I want to write another one just so I can be on your show again.
Consider the invitation in the mail. I love you, brother.
Blessings, blessings.
Blessings to you, my brother. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast and want to hear more, please subscribe or become a patron of the show at BarryKibrick.com to keep it going every week. Thank you.